Went to the policy planning meeting for the month of June for the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors. We will come back to a county board picnic update if Supervisor Kyle arrives, but I will ask for conference reports and announcements from supervisors in the meantime. Any conference reports? Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I attended the Wisconsin County Highway Association conference last week, and which is also known as WCHA. And basically, I attended one day, and I had a chance to hear a few reports I found really interesting. The one was on asphalt maintenance, and basically what I got out of this report is one of the things I think it's important for the board to understand. It's 5 times more costly to replace a road than to maintain or to prevent that replacement of the road. Or that's a conservative estimate. Sometimes it's even more costly to replace a road. The other thing I want to mention, I attended another session on what is a WCHA and how do they benefit counties, and how can county board supervisors use the WCHA. And I guess one thing I want to just provide, especially information for new board members who aren't familiar with the organization, they are the they basically protect the interest of Wisconsin counties in terms of transportation issues and road issues. And they've kind of the organization has transformed themselves more from a kind of a road school or type of organization where they do a lot of work with the road school to more of a policy advising body. And I don't know if our county I don't see him here, our county highway commissioner's here, but basically I want to just say a couple things about that. Is I think it's important for the board to know that the WCHA is trying to look out for our best interests in transportation issues, and I want to compliment our county commissioner and our assistant county commissioner because they are really involved in the organization, and they have taken a leadership role in the organization. And I think it's really important, and a lot of counties are, you know, cutting back, for example, travel expenses, and they're cutting back because of budget reasons, they're cutting back on some of these opportunities for their department heads to get involved in these organizations. And I think that's just the opposite of what we should be doing, because our county commissioner and assistant commissioner play such a important role in that process. So I think I compliment their work in that organization. They are definitely an integral part of making sure that our best interests are being served. And I just want to say congratulations to our county, our management team for La Crosse County. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Burns. Supervisor Burke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two items. One is a resource fair that's going to take place this Thursday, June 14th, in rooms 1615 and 1617 in the Justice Center. And this is related to that transitioning from jail to community initiative we've been involved in. And there will be people there, or groups there, community resources that are available for ex-offenders. So it's a good opportunity for us to understand what's in the community. And then also others have been invited from our justice system and other area systems to come and discover what those resources are. So that's Thursday, June 14th from 9:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. And I'll put that up in the bulletin board. The other thing is on your desk, and it's just a single sheet that looks like this, and it says arts and economic prosperity. And this was a study that was just released this morning. There was a news conference at the Pump House, and the Arts and Economic Prosperity 4 study was conducted by the Americans for the Arts, and it's to document the economic impact of the nonprofit arts and culture industry in 182 communities and regions. There were 139 cities and counties, 31 multi-city or multi-county regions, and 10 states and 2 individual arts districts. So it represents all of the 50 United States and the District of Columbia. And the sheet that you have, obviously, is just a summary of it. I have the entire report if you'd like to see that. But it does indicate the impact of the arts, and I represent you on the City Arts Committee and have since its beginning. And so this just is, the purpose of this is to show you that investing in arts and culture yields economic benefits. Sometimes, whether I was in a school system, and unfortunately when money gets tight, often the things that they start to want to cut are music and you know, instrumental music, vocal music, art, those kinds of activities. And this is really about the economic benefits, and it helps to lay to rest common misconceptions that the community support the arts and culture at the expense of local economic development. In fact, investing in it shows that it really is a benefit for communities. So I hope you'll take the opportunity to read that, and I appreciate being able to be on the City Arts Committee. My experience has been in drama. I have that was a minor for me, and a something that I participated in. And it's as we look at the new community collaboration with the community theater, that going up in the Arts District, I think that the city, what benefits the city there, and the Art District benefits the county. For the purposes of the survey, residents were considered to be people in the county of La Crosse, non-residents, those outside the county. So, thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Burke, and thank you for your service on the Arts Board. Supervisor Pedretti.
Thank you. I attended on Friday the WASAC conference, Wisconsin Association of County Extension Committees, up in Eau Claire. The morning portion was a business portion. The afternoon we did a tour of a frac sand processing plant and the actual mine. Very interesting. If anybody is interested in learning a little about that, we will be discussing that issue at our PR&D, but it was a very good event. One thing I would want to say is compliments to our staff again. UW Extension, Carl Green, gave the presentation, and he did a fabulous job. His presentation and his work is being used statewide. So, again, we have great staff. And then on a separate note, I want to compliment our county clerk. As you know, we recently held election. I know, surprise to everybody, with a very high turnout. Our county clerk did a fabulous job of keeping everybody informed at the town level. We had a mini little clerk's retreat on Friday, and I heard more than one clerk comment on how wonderful it is to have a resource that we have with our county clerk. She does a fabulous job of keeping things running and running legally and on the right track, and so I just want to compliment her on that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Pedretti. Supervisor Friedland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I attended a while back a sustainability conference at Western, and I wanted to report on that. First thing I wanted to say is that Western is really positioning itself to be a regional resource in sustainability issues. They've taken this on as an important mission, and they're trying very hard to bring together different people and offices and organizations and so forth to discuss sustainability issues. At this particular meeting, there were biologists, there were food service managers. The county was well represented, as you can imagine, and many of the accomplishments we already know about, green tier, gas to energy, and so forth. A very interesting process was used that I want to tell you the name of if none of you have done this before, so you'll be on the lookout for it. It was called the World Cafe format, where with, I don't know, 75 or 100 people there, everyone had the opportunity to actually sit with each other person and to talk and learn about their organization for a few minutes, and it flowed. It was very interesting. So what emerged from all of this, after putting all the ideas together of where the future is and what to do in the future, some of the three top needs that surfaced were, number one, getting information to elected officials so that they could be knowledgeable and they could understand sustainability issues and so that they could become leaders as appropriate. That was number one. Simplifying so that everybody knows what they're supposed to do in their organization. And third, public and private partnerships working best together.
Thank you, Supervisor Friedland. Any correlation between that World Cafe format and speed dating? No, I'm joking. I'm joking.
I don't know, but I thought we could use it as a retreat kind of format in the future sometime.
Thank you. Supervisor Doyle.
Thank you. I have negative and positive. I'm going to start with a negative. How many times have we told the WCA people that this is a waste of money? This organization is not sustainable if they keep putting out these high-gloss, fancy things that I'm guessing three-quarters of this group are going to throw away the moment you get home with them. I'd ask our county administrator to send probably another in a series of letters to them saying, please ask us which people want these before they send them to us. I mean, it's really more expense than they should be incurring. So that's the negative. On the positive note, I would like to congratulate the sustainability queen for her article in the paper today. I hope everybody saw the article about Marilyn Pedretti in the La Crosse Tribune. She truly is somebody who walks the walk, doesn't just talk the talk. So congratulations, Marilyn.
Thank you, Chairman Doyle. Congratulations, Supervisor Pedretti, who through her suntan, I think, is blushing back there in the third row. Any other supervisor, any other conference reports or announcements? Supervisor Schrader.
Thank you. I, too, attended the summer road school that Jim was referring to. On Monday, I co-chaired the WCA Transportation and Public Works Steering Committee and the WCHA Legislative Committee with Emmer Shields from the WCHA. And some of the things that were talked about there is review of the WCA transportation legislative priorities, the legislative platforms. It was all political in a way. And consider any additional transportation priorities. And then that was on Monday. On Tuesday, one of the main speakers at this session was Bob Fogle. He's the NACO Senior Legislative Director, and he talked about the federal reauthorization efforts and current status. Talked about the proposed amounts of dollars amounts for surface transportation bill, and he said that the bottom line was that everything that was key to everything passing in that was the Keystone Pipeline. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. He says that it'll probably take place after the election in a lame duck session. And then on Tuesday also, Department Secretary Gottlieb, Transportation Secretary Gottlieb, the issue of raiding transportation funds must go through another legislative round before it's become law. How does that work, Steve? Do they have to? You guys actually have to vote on that then? Or
yep.
Rating of transportation funds.
So,
yeah.
R-A-I-D.
Rating, yeah.
Rating. So let's. Why don't you finish up with your report and then?
Yeah. Okay.
If Supervisor Doyle wants to answer, that'd be great.
Okay. Okay, he reported on the Transportation Finance and Policy Commission. They've met seven times around the state, and their goals are service delivery. That's what their discussion is, service delivery, adequate funding, definition and types of maintenance, performance and best practice, benchmarks, regionalized maintenance, and, of course, all will require additional funding. Concerns and issues, the federal trust fund must be reauthorized, which it is not yet. We have, and Secretary Gottlieb was also concerned that we'd have to streamline the environmental review process, the coordination of U.S. and state DOTs on policy, and then also now the overload restrictions before we were worried about the logging industry as far as their oversized trucks and loads. Now it's ag and frac sand. And as always, safety. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Schrader. Supervisor Doyle, did you want to comment on the segregated funds in the state budget process briefly?
Well, it comes up in two respects. One is in the budget itself. Obviously, if the governor proposes that the fund be raided, the legislature obviously can amend the budget to not have that happen. Secondly, it's been talked about on a number of occasions in terms of separate legislation to prohibit that happening. I think there's pretty strong support for prohibiting the fund raids at this point. I guess I'd be surprised in the near future of any fund raids because of the high amount of attention it's gotten.
Thank you. Any other supervisor conference reports or announcements? If not, Mr. O'Malley, administrator's report.
Great. Good evening. Beginning with the proclamation, June 2012, Parks and Natural Resources Month. Whereas the county park system and our natural resources are an integral part of the La Crosse County community, and whereas the quality of our parks and natural resources provides safe and healthy places for residents and visitors to recreate and enjoy, and whereas residents and visitors are encouraged to educate themselves and adopt responsible lifestyles that preserve the beauty and value of our parks and natural resources, whereas La Crosse County employees from the Facilities Department and the Department of Land Conservation serve to educate, protect, maintain, and enhance the quality of our parks and natural resources, now therefore be it resolved, La Crosse County Board does hereby proclaim the month of June 2012 as La Crosse County Parks and Natural Resources Month and urges all residents to join in recognizing the valuable contribution made by county employees dedicated to the welfare of our parks and natural resources for the benefit of our residents and visitors to La Crosse County.
Supervisor Brockmiller moves approval of the proclamation, seconded by Supervisor Burns. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That proclamation is approved. Back to you, Mr. O'Malley.
Madam Chair, members of the board, it is my distinct privilege to be able to recommend the appointments of department heads. It's one of the best days I have as a county administrator. If Nate Sampson would come forward, please. It's no secret to those of you, particularly on the Planning Resources Development Commission, that we've been replacing and in the process of replacing a longstanding department head, Jeff Blusky, who's been serving our community for well over 35 years. I've got the pleasure to announce and recommend to you, with the unanimous support of the Planning Resources Development Committee, Nate Sampson, who is currently our interim department head, and with your approval this evening, I would hope we appoint him as our permanent department head. Nate comes to us with a great resume, Bachelor of Science degree. He was a former zoning administrator in Buffalo County, Wisconsin, and Wabasha County, Wisconsin. And then when he came to us in 2006, he worked his way up through the ranks, starting out as a land use specialist, moving on to zoning supervisor, and now has been our interim director. And I just want to introduce Nate and ask for your recommendation, but maybe if Nate would like to say a few words. This, like I said, is the 10th department head that I've been privileged to be able to recommend to you, and I hope you support my recommendation.
Nate, how about if we do the motion to approve the county administrator's recommendation, and then we would love to hear from you. Moved by Supervisor Pedretti, seconded by Supervisor Landre. Discussion on approving Mr. O'Malley's recommendation to appoint Nate Sampson as the Planning and Zoning Administrator. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is approved unanimously. Welcome, Nate Sampson.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much. Coming from a small rural county where I worked for a number of years, I just want you to know the reputation and the respect that La Crosse County holds beyond her borders. I hope I can continue that respect and garner further respect through our program. This is especially a special evening for me tonight, and thank you very much.
Welcome. Welcome, Nate. Again, welcome back. Welcome. I don't know what the right term is. Sorry
welcome
about that.
Congratulations on the promotion.
Yes,
that would be
thank you. Back to you, Mr. O'Malley.
Okay. We have a number of items that I think you'll find very interesting and educational for you this evening, and each one of them represents a really high priority, I think, within the expectations of our community and the expectations of this county board historically, both for new board members to learn about the partnerships and relationships we have, but also existing board members, long-time-serving board members, to keep up to date on what occurs in our community. The first one that we have, of course, is the annual report by Cooley Cap, and as I asked Grace Jones to come forward with the board's permission, you do have information on your desk that you can read in your leisure with far more information, and while every year we appreciate the good work of Cooley Cap serving our community, you know the work that Cooley Cap has done in particular with the struggling situation that we've had in Rockland and being able to do the things that we need to do to recover and sell properties there to provide affordable quality housing for folks. Cooley Cap has really stepped to the forefront and been a great partner over this last year and a half in particular in that area. So with no further ado, I'd just ask if Grace would come forward and give you some comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. O'Malley. Somewhere in your materials, I think you have our annual report and a one-page insert about just La Crosse County. I did want to mention we're a private nonprofit. We cover four counties, La Crosse, Monroe, Vernon, and Crawford. We have about a $9 million, $10 million annual budget. We are helping about 37,000 people per year, so we have a lot going on at Cooley Cap. In 2011, we celebrated our 45th anniversary, and in the annual report across the bottom, there's a black area that we don't usually have in our annual report, but it gives historical information about the agency. And just a few highlights I'd like to mention there. First of all, Cooley Cap started the Head Start program in 1966. We started family planning in 1970. We started nutrition sites and Meals on Wheels. We started home weatherization in 1973. We still operate that. We started the first transitional housing units for homeless people in 1989. And we also started up the RSVP program in 1972. So many of those programs have spun off, but they were actually started by Cooley Cap. On the one-page insert on the front, we've provided some additional information focusing in on our programs for the homeless, because we do quite a bit of that in La Crosse County. We actually have 90 units that we're providing to homeless families to get them out of shelters and to help stabilize their lives. So 90 is quite a few, actually. And then at the bottom of the front of that page, we have a new Housing First program that was funded by HUD, and this is going to focus on folks that are homeless and who are suffering from pretty severe mental illness and or alcohol and chemical dependency problems. And so the whole idea is get these folks out of the system, stabilize them, have housing so they're costing society much less and their own personal suffering would decrease. On the back of that page, last year we weatherized 230 homes, housing rehab on 17, helped 16 families buy their first home. And then a little more information on Rockland. This has been a great project for us to participate in. We have 16 rental duplexes that we have built there, totaling 12 units. The Rockland Phase 1, all four of those houses are sold. Phase 2 are four additional houses that we will be building in Rockland. One of them will go into the land trust. These will all be for sale in the fall. For a family of four, for example, the maximum income would be $54,700. This equates to 80% of the county median income. The houses are worth about $175,000, selling $497,000. So there are substantial loans and deferred loans and subsidies that are on those houses, but they're affordable enough for 80% of county medium income folks to get into them. We've also run, this is a more recent update, and it's not in the materials because they're from 2011. Another program is the Neighborhood Stabilization Program. We've are working on five single-family homes this summer and fall. Four of them we're demolishing, and we're putting up new homes, and one is actually a rehab. Four of them are on the north side of La Crosse and one on the south side. We have established a new entity, a Cooley Community Realty. We're doing the housing through this realty that's staffed by Cooley Cap. We are the broker for the county for the other lots out in Rockland, and we're able to handle those real estate transactions at a much lower commission, both for the houses that we build and sell and then for those county lots in Rockland. We currently have 9 homes in the land trust that we established that I've talked to you about before, and this year we'll be adding 3 in Onalaska, 1 from Hillsboro, and those 5 NSP homes that I mentioned earlier. One other update, we just received funding from USDA for a private well program. So if you know of somebody with a private well that where it needs replacement or repair or work done on it, they could contact Cooley Cap about our new private well program. We're applying for many housing rehab grants. The Community Development Block Grant has been regionalized by the state, and La Crosse was recently selected as the lead agency for a 10 to 11 county region, and we're just really happy about that. We feel that program's in good hands, and then we, of course, would hope to bid on those dollars when they are eventually available. And then finally, I just finished my 2-year term as the chairperson of the Family Policy Board, the La Crosse County Family Policy Board. Glad to do it. Glad it's over. It was a 2-year term, and you know, you just never know how much time something will take when you volunteer to serve on it. I'm sure you all can relate to that. But I wanted to thank the Human Services Department. You have wonderful staff people there that are just top notch that we work with all the time, and then also your Planning Department staff, fabulous folks. And last but not least, I want to mention that we employ 12 residents of La Crosse County. Our programs total about $3.6 million now, and we have 2 great board members appointed by the county board, Maureen Friedland and Monica Cruz, and they're just great, dedicated board members, always show up. Thank you so much. So that would conclude my whirlwind report.
Any questions of Grace? Supervisor Gamroth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for all the work in Rockland. Everybody appreciates it. I get calls, and I drive out there frequently, and I'm very happy. I'm glad to see all the work. I also had a call. Is there a lot of budget cuts in your office? Are there a lot of staffing changes that are coming?
Well, in most of our programs, yes, and the cuts are ranging from 10 to 25%. It's state, federal funding. A lot of the funds are being reduced and shrunk over the last couple of years and then now. So we kind of went from a high of stimulus funding where our agency size almost doubled, and then we ramped back from that, and then additional cuts are occurring, yes.
How many staff members are you losing possibly?
Well, from the high of ERA, we've probably had to lay off 20 to 30 people. And then we've had some pretty substantial wage cuts, including yours truly, so 10 to 20% in wage cuts of individual employees and layoffs. And we've avoided some layoffs by not refilling positions, so when people have left, we haven't refilled. So we're down a couple people in admin and in programs. So that's just how it goes in the nonprofit world. When the funding shrinks, right, so do your staff resources.
I also had a call from a West Salem resident that your organization helped with her winterizing her mobile home, and she was so grateful.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. And thank you for Rockland very much.
You're welcome. We're glad to be there.
Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the report. I noticed your grant revenue is $8.5 million for this past fiscal year. How much of that money, approximately how much of that money comes from where are the main sources of your grants? Federal monies mainly? Was it all state?
Federal, state, although much of the state comes through the federal government, and then some private fundraising, United Way, La Crosse Foundation, Frankie Foundation. So I would be glad to give you the list of all of our funding sources, but it's one page, single spaced, and probably 50.
Approximately what's your biggest source of funding?
Federal.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments? I would just especially, in light of the response to Supervisor Gamroth's question, let everybody know that there is a donation envelope in the centerfold of the annual report if you are so inclined. I'm sure that Cooley Cap would appreciate any additional support that anybody would provide, but in particular county board supervisors. I would encourage you to do that. As a former Cooley Cap board member myself, I know that the money is well spent. So thank you, Grace, for your report.
Thank you.
Back to you, Mr. O'Malley.
Yes, thank you. The next item we've got is a report by a rather unique work group, because it's one of the only work groups that occurs in our county operation that includes county board members, department heads, line staff, really working to make our community more open and accepting and representative of our community and meeting the needs of our community from wherever they come from, whatever background they come from, because doing the county's work, doing public service, it's very critical that we are responding to people where they come from, how they need us to respond, and that's been a standard that we've tried to establish over the last several years. The genesis of the diversity work group really came from discussions that Maureen and Sharon and I had over a period of time many years ago, and resulted in the creation of a work group of several people from across the organization. Many people have been on the diversity work group for a while and then moved on, and other people from their departments have come to serve, and we meet every other month and talk about issues of diversity and acceptance and how we're doing as a county organization for both our staff and for the community. So Sharon and Maureen, I think what we're doing is I'm introducing Scott. Is that our first, or are you folks going to come forward? Okay. One of the folks I'd like to introduce is Scott Grosskopf, and he's going to share something with us. So.
Great. Looks like everybody should have one by now. Again, my name is Scott Grosskopf. I just want to start out with a real quick activity, and if everyone could take a look at your sheet there. Just going to go through and have you, by your visual rendering of me, seeing me, like you to answer a few questions. Don't worry if you don't want to share your answer. You don't have to. But go through... answer your question, the questions on here. How old am I? How old do you think I am? Me. Hi. How old me? And once you have that, do you think I'm married? What type of vehicle do you think I drive? What level of education do you think I've achieved in my life? Do you think I have children? What do you think my political affiliations are, if any? And lastly, what do you think my religious practices are? All right, so the one that I love the most is, how old do you think I am? Is anybody willing to even venture a guess?
Go ahead, Supervisor Schrader.
The answer to all of mine was, doesn't matter.
That was good. That was, I like that. Anybody else want to venture? All right. Do you think I'm married? All right. Anybody want to venture on what vehicle I drive? Anybody want to go for the level of education?
Math.
Do you think I have children? What are my political affiliations? Do I have any religious practices? All right, so I will actually go through. How old am I? I am 38. Am I married? Unfortunately, no. It's not legal in our state yet. I actually am an openly gay male. I've been with my partner for 6 years, and we are raising my child, our 12-year-old child, together, our son, who goes to Holman Middle School. Level of education, very close. I am actually just finished up my first year of master's education. Again, have children, yes, obviously, one child. Political affiliations, not that it matters. I am Democrat. And religious practices, am Lutheran. Nissan Maxima, sorry. Point of the activity, and thank you so much. I appreciate that answer very much. Why does it matter? Big thing, especially I do work here at the county. I am a social worker in human services with child protection. One of the big things with La Crosse is we are growing in diversity by the day. And the important thing to note is people, unfortunately, by just visually looking at someone, will make judgments, will make assumptions. And we need to, as a county, embrace the fact that diversity is growing and we need to grow with it. So with that, thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott. Let's see, Sharon and Maureen are going to come forward.
Thank you, Scott. That was a lot of fun. I did think you were closer to 40. But, but I know you don't have kids because you don't look stressed out enough. We're going to have a PowerPoint. Maureen's going to go through that. But I wanted to point out our signs, which will soon be all over our buildings. And look at this. This is so cute.
Sharon, will you stay on the microphone, too, so it gets picked up on the recording?
Unity stands out there. Isn't that sweet? I love it. All right. Maureen.
Okay. So, I think we have about 10 slides. Not too many. Diversity. We put up the definition for it. It's an old word. It's meant a lot of different things through the years. I looked up diversity, and on Wikipedia, there's business diversity, how to have a more heterogeneous base to appeal to, biodiversity, political diversity, which constitution do you adhere to, the state or the federal, for example. There's even antenna diversity in wireless communication to improve links. So I think we know that that's not the kind of diversity that we're here to talk about tonight, but it is an important concept to many of us in many different regards. Okay, next, please. Oh.
Like a trigger.
Okay, so I have to
just
trigger. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So this is the mission of the work group, and I'll point out it's not a task force, it's not a committee. It's a work group that's comprised of employees, county board members. You can read it over there. It's important to us because it affects county jobs and also the people who work for the county. I went too far. How do I go back?
Untrigger.
Okay. These are some of the items that the county provides regardless of the work group. Some of this is done by virtue of county board work, other parts of it required by federal law, by by state law. So these are some of the features that you'll see in county government that reflect diversity. Okay, this is the logo that Sharon pointed out, and it's going to be in various places around county buildings in several places as a statement of our philosophy, which is important, I think, to be expressed. An anonymous survey was done of county staff and also board members. Some of you may remember receiving that during the last term. We didn't discuss it, so Sharon is going to take that portion, and she's going to go over the results of that so you can learn a little bit more about the views of the county board members regarding diversity. This is the county's training and learning center site that we don't have access to as county board members. It's not something that we can access on our own home computers, but the La Crosse County staff is able to go to what's called the TLC to get training on different aspects, and there's all sorts of different documents, videos, and so forth. And if you're interested in getting a more of an in-depth education on any of the topics that the county staff is trained on, you can come in and do it on the computers. What we do have that you have access to is this right here, the diversity webpage. And if you go to your terminals over here on the left side, you'll see that there's a link. It's called, what is it called?
County View.
County View. And if you go to the County View, again, all the way on the left side, I think the second or third from the bottom, the diversity webpage is there. So you can make comments and suggestions and give us some information if you want, learn more. And it's something that you can do during idle moments while you're sitting in this room. and if I see you do it from the back row, I'll give everybody a Hershey's kiss or something, whatever. Okay, so some of the diversity work group activities. These are some of the accomplishments that we've had so far. You've read the county newsletter, so you've seen the stories in the newsletter. We're collaborating with the La Crosse Area Diversity Council. As a matter of fact, on Thursday of this week at the, what do they call that, the North Side Beach Station, or what's it called on the north side of town? I forget what it's called. What's it called? Black River Beach House. The Diversity Council is having a speaker on integrating returning service members into the employment force in the area. So I think that's going to be a very important discussion. Promoting cultural awareness events. The county has been a contributor to some of, financial contributor, in contributed in other ways also to some of the local diversity endeavors around town. We're collaborating with the City of La Crosse regarding the Americans with Disabilities Act Day. The ADA, as some of you may remember, was passed in 1990 by Republicans as well as Democrats. It was signed into effect by George H.W. Bush, and it's been very successful in many regards. Staff has attended many different kinds of training. The disproportionate minority contact item is something that the Criminal Justice Management Council has looked at. It has to do with whether minorities are contacted or unequally pegged by law enforcement for possible violations as opposed to the white the more white community. So these are some of the things that we've done so far. W- We've had a number of brown bag lunches on cultural competency, many different topics, and you all do have these as a handout to take home if you'd like to read these. I won't go through those, but there's been a lot of very interesting topics that that have been taken up as brown bag lunches. And what are we going to do in the future? We're collaborating with staff at UWL to develop a program that'll have to do with inclusive language, LGBT. You can read it yourself over here. The frontline staff is going to be trained in the future, special attention. Frontline staff, those are the people that actually meet and greet the public and really have to be the people who first know what kind of directions need to be given. For example, how to get translators, when to get translators, how to arrange all that. The purpose of all this is so that we can serve our clients better, so that we can have them working more effectively in their programs. And that's going to be a major topic over the next coming year. So any ideas for training ideas or the future, what we should be doing with this work group would be appreciated. The person besides Sharon and myself to direct this to would be Linda Clowett. She is sort of a go-to person with Health and Human Services, or just Human Services Department, and she's also the link on the website. Before we go to this, I guess our logo must be at the. Okay. Yeah. Just a little bit more. One of the members of the work group, Lisa Collins, who's with she's with Aging and Disability Resource Center, took it on herself to contact some people that she knows in different sections of human services to see what diversity initiatives they're doing, because it's very important to be working with our clients in ways that they'll benefit from, and also to work with each other in ways so that we understand, or the employees understand each other and can work with each other best to the benefit of the clients and the taxpayers. And I just want to report on this a little bit. Mental Health Recovery Services, for example, is seeking to identify providers in the La Crosse area that are skilled with working with different cultures on mental health issues. Different cultures have different crises and different ways of responding to crises. So it's very important for the mental health workers to know how to reach that population correctly. In Family and Children's Services, Rochelle Zimmerman, for example, is teaching what is called foundations training to foster parents, so that foster parents will know how to know about the cultural issues that affect poverty and the values that are related to different socioeconomic classes. And let's see, Aging and Disability Resource Center is working with homeless individuals, with transgender people there's a need for more discussion due to the sensitivity of gender identification and sexual orientation issues. Aging and Disability Resource Center is looking at the culture of poverty also regarding the homeless. And also Steve Johnson is involved in a transportation committee that's looking at cultural needs regarding the use of public transportation and how to help people on fixed income such as Social Security get the transportation needs that they need. Health Department, WIC Department, different issues, language barriers for Asians, Hmong, and the Hispanic population. So I have appreciated being on this work group committee for reasons of the goals, but also because it's an opportunity for me to really work with the employees and to understand what they're doing on a day-to-day basis and to see their perceptions about our progress and our ways of moving forward. So I'll turn this over to Sharon, and I'm sure she's going to have a comment about this particular picture first.
How do you make it go back?
Oh, so we needed to go back to the questionnaire. Right.
Well, that graphic, when I saw it in a very small format, I thought it was a hot tub. And that was like, you know, different cultural groups in a hot tub together. I don't know. It's actually the world. So I'm going to talk about the survey. Now, those of you who are new on the board did not participate this, and this was our last term when we had 35 supervisors. We've also given this questionnaire to all of the employees. Now, the first thing you need to know about a questionnaire is who answered. The demographics from both board and staff, there were more females that responded than males, but we have more female employees. The ages were predominantly in the 30 to 60 group, older on the board. 14 people from the board out of 35 returned their surveys, and 262 staff returned them. And I think we have 1,300 staff. So take it but however you want, but that's the return. And then the question was, are there other identities you think we should be looking at besides your age, your race, your sex? And the suggestions were short, bald, chubby, heterosexual Republican, Satanist, and my favorite, Italian, and damn proud of it. So I, you know, not sure all this was taken terribly seriously. Second question is asking what's the impact on you on a daily basis. And the board basically agreed that there are impacts daily, and the staff strongly agreed, but a significant minority objected to this and said, no, there's just no, it doesn't matter. The third question, how much do you know? And both the board and the staff said we know some, and it ranged up to quite a bit. So a broad range there. Fourth question, is there information readily available for staff and clients? And the staff, most importantly, said yes, they do have the information available. The board said we don't know. So it's better that, you know, the staff need to know where it is. Other issues that we need to address. The board said racism and rent garden space to the Hmong. And the staff said we need more information on languages, we need more interpreters, phone messages that are in different languages and for the deaf need to be improved. How to work with aging and the elderly population is becoming an issue. And try as we might, we don't have the best wheelchair access and we don't have Braille elevator buttons and signs. And there is, and this was mentioned several times, sexual harassment among coworkers. So those are the kind of issues that they're feeling like still need to be addressed. Fifth question was, what makes you feel uncomfortable? And on the board, four of you said none, and others said mental illness, public prayer, male dominance, bigotry, and dealing with angry, middle-class white people who think they're threatened by anyone not like them. And in terms of the staff, they're dealing with the things that make them uncomfortable are the language barriers and clients who come in who are racist and make nasty comments. Illegal immigrants make them uncomfortable, responding to people with physical or mental handicaps and differing views on parenting, which can often be culturally based. And also differing values on morals and cultural actions and LGBT issues. Those are often make people uncomfortable, and they don't quite know how to deal with them. And again, the Italian person did say that being Italian-American from the East Coast, I'm misinterpreted and misconstrued in the Midwest. So it's very sad for that person. They feel that way. Sixth question, does La Crosse County create an environment where everyone is treated with dignity and respect? And the board said, yes, we do. Nice to know. And on the staff, other comments were, there are too many men at the top, There are pockets of racism and sexism throughout the county. The criminal justice system is racist. The county is trying hard and has good employees, and the staff said predominantly, yes, it's a good atmosphere, and we're trying very hard. Many positive comments on how well we're doing. They did mention that we need more diverse staff, and there were some complaints about lack of respect from management and from one or two board members. Number seven, what specific diversity trainings do you need to see offered? The board said how to create links to certain populations, get more of them on committees, just make contacts. How do we do that? Religious tolerance, LGBT, racism, especially in the jail, and the glass ceiling. The staff said racial diversity, disabilities, mental health, poverty, diverse family systems and parenting styles, and more information on different cultural groups. And someone wants us to teach English to everyone. Eighth question, are there challenges? And the board said, yes, we need diversity training for ourselves. We need to recruit more diverse candidates for jobs in the county and more training for jailers and law enforcement. And we need to improve respect for older coworkers. So there were older coworkers feeling they're not getting very, very well treated. The staff talked about non-English speaking clients and a more diverse staff. More complaints about management. There was some concern about religious holidays that some people find those offensive. How to leave your own personal bias at home, come into work, and work with a variety of diverse people. Handling racist and sexist coworkers, and there was quite a lot about, you know, when people tell racist jokes, I don't know how to respond. And so that's making them uncomfortable. And there was some, I consider, underlying anger and resentment by some of the people on the staff. You know, like, this isn't a problem. Why do you keep talking about it? Why do we keep having to hear about it? And the last question, other comments. And comments from the board. La Crosse is growing more diverse, and we are not prepared. We need more help on LGBT issues. The mentally ill do not belong in jail. And my favorite, I have heard comments from some members of the county board that show they are likely threatened by the leadership roles women on the board have taken. I did not write that down. That was not me. It wasn't me. And the staff asked for, they're appreciative that there's been more attention paid to it in recent years. They're still concerned about discrimination against the white culture, and they think we need a better lending library of books, films, and trainings on TLC. And also we need feedback from clients on how they think we're serving them and how they as a group or as a person come in, and do they feel like they're accepted just the way they come in? Are they treated appropriately? Lots of comments on how well we do. And then a question that I thought was interesting, and Bob's not here, is he? Why are female department heads and supervisors paid less than male? Well, I doubt they are, but that's the perception that's out there. So that was interesting. And finally, how can we get slow drivers out of the left lane? Well, you know, we can't control everything. So that's the results of that survey. It's not fair to give a survey out and then not discuss the results. So that's what there is. Any questions on any of that? Mr. Landre.
Thank you. Can I just ask, when you begun talking about the demographics of the people who answered it, if you asked what the race of the people who were answering these questions?
The question was on gender and age group, and then any other identity you would like to highlight about yourself. So it just started with male, female, and age group.
Okay, and the reason why I asked that is that I think what you guys did was wonderful. One of the things I run into is that in my district, it's probably the most racially and economically diverse districts in the county. Mm-hmm. And I hear from people of other ethnicities all the time that they don't have their voice heard, and I wonder if there's a way that a survey such as this one could actually be conducted to include people who are not white, who are, I mean, I wonder if the survey that was conducted was asked of too many middle-class white people.
Well, the intent was to ask the county board and then to ask employees so we could get a grasp on what they're thinking and what their needs are in those both of those groups. I think the next place we're going to look is a way to ask clients how they feel about how they're treated and are they appropriately dealt with. And I think that's where we need to go from here next. And that would be a way to gauge how well we're doing, how well we're coming across to people. And then beyond that, you know, as supervisors, like you said, yours is a very diverse district. Mine really isn't. But how do those of us that are on the county board that are representing diverse groups, how do we get to those people and what can we do to be more inclusive to them so that they do feel like their voices is better heard? So we have a lot of work ahead of us. Anything else? All right.
So I want to thank Scott for coming here today, and also Va Tao is here. She is she works with the Hmong population in the aging Hmong population, and she's one of the people who has sat on this task force with us. We really have a variety of people, and they're really very, very eager to share and to see us move forward. And like I said, I've really learned a lot about how the county actually works from working with the employees. And she's going to conclude by just saying a few words about, well, I'll let her say what she wants to say. Thank you. Thank you very much for your attention and listening. Oh, and one more thing. I have a multicultural resource guide that was done by the Diversity Council. I have a few extra copies that talks about different services for Hmong, Asian Americans, African Americans, different cultural events and education. So if anybody wants one of these, I can give it to them. Thank you very much.
Good evening, everyone. I think I need a step stool here. I think Eileen and Sharon has said everything about the group, and so I just want to let everybody know that I feel very fortunate to be a part of the group and to be a part of a group that embraces diversity. And you know, universally, you know, everybody, people are attracted to places and people who respect and you know, respect them with, you know, are respectful and are you know, welcoming. And so I just want to say that the goal of our, I can't speak for everybody, but I believe that the goal of our diversity work group is just to do that, is to make people feel respected and also to make people feel like they have their dignity. And so we want to make a La Crosse County a place where it is welcome for clients and also employees alike, that they feel welcome and they feel safe and they feel like they're included. And I that's how I feel. And so I'm very, very happy about that. And just to reiterate that this sign will be kind of out and about in a few places around the county. And that sends a very kind of powerful message to our employees and also especially the people outside of this county. And so at the same time, it's a very good message, but that also is kind of like a message to them. We're kind of setting ourselves up too in a way. People will look at us and people will pay more attention to how we react, how our attitudes are towards them. And so our next challenge, not really a challenge, but more like a opportunity, is to be able to reflect that, you know, reflect what our message, what we send out there, are we reflecting that? And so like I said again, I can't speak for everybody else, but I can say that I believe that people, we want to, we don't want to change people's mind, and we don't want to change people's beliefs and values, because those are very important. And this is a very individualized, I say individualized because that's our culture. But I do believe that we do need to be, we don't want to change people, but we do want people to be understanding, and we also want people to be non-judgmental. And so I would like to just say that we are doing a very good job with that. And I am Florie, and I've seen that. But there's much more that we can do. I want to thank everybody for encouraging that, and I want to thank everybody for promoting that, and thank everybody. Sorry.
Well, thank you very much. That really captured what I've experienced in working with the diversity work group over the last several years, and it really reminds us of the stage of how we present ourselves to the community. The inclusivity training that we're going to be talking about and that will be developed by the work group will expand something we've been doing for the last 9 years, which is recognizing that our frontline staff, the top 80 to 90 people that are the front desk reception people in each of our organizations, are the most critical. They're the first point of contact for every level of service, and we continue to interact with them and try to help them as well as help us as an organization identify what the needs of the community are. So very blessed to be a part of an organization that's doing those types of things. So should we...
Any questions from the board before we finish on the diversity work group?
Can I just say that...
Supervisor Friedland?
Can I just say that one of the handouts on the desk is really very interesting. It's it has to do with differences in cultural ways of working with the Caucasian, the white community, and the Hmong community. And Vod did this as part of a brown bag. And I think if you all take this home and look at some of just the really small things like, you know, eye contact and touching and so forth, I think you'll really enjoy and appreciate some of these differences.
One last comment I want to make sure I don't neglect. Linda Cloet has just been an amazing, dynamic person that keeps us on track, actually does our committee minutes, each time that we come back together, she's making sure that we're following through on the goals and objectives that we've talked about. If you get a chance to meet Linda, if you haven't, she's just a dynamite person in our Human Services Department. I would be remiss if I didn't point out what a great help and guidance she's been to us. So, Nick.
Yeah, thank you all, and thank you to Supervisors Friedland and Hampson for additional work on the diversity work group, and also to Va and to Scott and to Steve, Linda, the whole group. I think this is a very appropriate, timely topic for a county board policy planning meeting. So thank you very much. Back to you for our last item.
Yes, the last item is really... part of our orientation that we continue to do is to try to help us be prepared for the upcoming budget cycle over the next 2 years. And one of the items that I don't think we all may always recognize is that being a cross-divisional team that we are, Jim's department, as our facilities and parks director, does a whole lot of things for this entire organization. Any challenge that comes up in relation to capital improvement projects or nearly anything I've ever asked Jim to do, he's willing to step up and work hard to help all departments throughout the entire organization. I think over this period of time, he's really guided our facilities discussions for every department, more so than just the downtown campus. And the orientation will give you an idea of some of those things, as well as set the stage for some of the discussions we're going to have about this building. So no further ado, Jim Spiropoulos.
Thank you. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Jim Spiropoulos, Facilities Director for you here at La Crosse County. I've got a brief 100-slide presentation. Shouldn't take more than 2 hours. what is the facilities department doing? How are we made up? This is really hard to see. But that's the best I could do on the slide. First of all, I've got four major sections of my department. I've got a parks and office supervisor that oversees the office functions, as well as the parks, the campgrounds, and so on, the maintenance of them. I've got a electrical maintenance supervisor that oversees all the electronics and electrical of the downtown campus and the parks. With the addition of the LEC addition, we have over 500 cameras just on the downtown campus alone, which takes a lot of work to keep up. I also have a building services division, which is in the law enforcement center. The screening of the law enforcement center public and employees coming in, and also an HVAC maintenance division that oversees the mechanical systems, the maintenance of the building, and also the cleaning of the law enforcement center and the contracted cleaning of admin and HHS. I also coordinate and help with Lakeview and Hillview maintenance and operation of the facilities there, as well as capital improvements. And I've been helping Highway with some of their building projects, too. Our mission statements, buildings and grounds, were to assure that county government has clean, well-maintained facilities, which meets public expectations while encouraging a positive work environment for employees. To serve as resource to all county departments in matters involving capital improvements and maintenance. We have a property management division that we represent the county in all real estate dealings and keeper of county property that isn't assigned to other departments, Park Plaza, County Farm, stuff like that, as well as the leases and rents on those properties. This thing isn't working every time, so... our parks division is to provide parks, campgrounds, and other outdoor areas and of activities that will afford opportunities for the public to enjoy our quality experience in the outdoors. And also to serve the county as an advocate in environment and protector of our natural resources that was talked about earlier. Areas of responsibility, we do operations, maintenance, door security, cleaning, capital improvements, and budget. On the downtown campus, we have 492,000 square feet in our three buildings downtown. Equates to about 328 homes of an average of 1,500 square feet. And you can see there the different square footage of each building. Our parks division does the same things, operates, maintains, cleans, capital improvements, and budget. For the parks, Goose Island Campground, Goose Island Park and Campground is 710 acres, which is actually owned by the Army Corps of Engineers that the county leases from them. We have a 25-year lease that I believe we have about 5 years left on. We have 400 campsites, three bath and shower houses, and six vault toilets that they maintain, five park shelters that we rent out. We have three boat landings, and we now have one dock at one of those three boat landings. Veterans Memorial Park and Campground, there's 232 acres there, 120 campsites, two bath and shower houses, five vault toilets, four park shelters, and one canoe landing. Also in the parks, we have Neshonic Schwartout Park up in West Salem. There's 20 acres on the upper park. One park shelter, vault toilet, and a boat dock, a boat landing, and boat dock and canoe landing by the dam. Neshonic South, which is Tilson Street Extended. Not a lot of people know about this area. There's 60 acres down there with one boat landing and boat dock. We also have Mindoro Park, that there's 114 acres, one sun shelter, and one vault toilet up there. Additional responsibilities, we maintain the parking lots for the downtown campus. My staff issues parking permits, parking tickets, and collects payments for those. We provide metal detection scanning services at the courthouse. Coordinate building capital improvement projects for the healthcare facilities, highway, and solid waste. We oversee and maintain tax delinquent properties. When the treasurer and corporation council takes delinquent properties, we make sure that they're kept up to the best we can and maintained. We oversee the office space in the courthouse and building rents. Land leases, the county farm, Park Plaza, park shelters, there's 10 of them total. We coordinate, Mary Kaufman and department coordinates snowmobile trail maintenance grants. There's 137 miles of snowmobile trails in La Crosse County. Maintain cross-country ski trails and hiking trails in all of our parks and Rabice Forest. We have a cross-country ski trail that we maintain there in winter when we have snow, which isn't too often. We actually manage and oversee 8 budgets with total expenditure in 2012 projected at $3.2 million. The major expenses in it are capital improvements, utilities, building maintenance and equipment repair, wages and fringes. We have total revenues projected at $764,000. Major revenues are campground and shelter revenues, parking lot, meter money, parking tickets and permits, land and building leases. So that's what the department takes care of mainly. And now I'd like to go into this building. And a lot of you have heard about it already, but some of you probably haven't. Some of the concerns we have and hurdles are the asbestos. This building still contains about 3/4 of the building with asbestos in it. And I've asked Rick Stickler from Midwest Environmental to talk to you about that in a little bit. We have inadequate electrical for computers and other devices that continue to grow. Plumbing deficiencies, HVAC equipment is at the end of its life. Printing floor deterioration, most of you know about it, some of you don't, so we'll kind of get into that a little bit. And then the built-up roofing that's actually under the rubber roof that it's at its end of its life. So now I've got a bunch of slides that just have pictures, and I'll try to describe most of them. This was taken back in 2001. Of our existing rubber roof, that we had several areas where the rubber is actually starting to shrink to the point where it's pulling away from the wall on up on the roof. So we went in back in 2011. Actually, I should have wrote down 2011. 2011, we went in and we added a 3-foot piece of rubber all the way around the perimeter to buy us some time to get rid of that issue we have. You can see right here where it looks like the elevation of the roof changes. The north half of the roof still has the old original built-up roofing system under it. Back when this roof was put on, they tore this side off, and in doing so, the equipment up there vibrated the asbestos fireproofing on the beams that it started to fall on the ceiling. At that time, the judges were up there, and they didn't like that, though, so they halted the work. So the end result was is we still have this heavy built-up rubber roofing or built-up roofing underneath the rubber and the rock ballast on top of it, and that's something we need to deal with. This is a picture of some plumbing piping that my staff got into in the ceiling space. You can see where the cast iron is cracked over time, and this is what some of the plumbing piping has looked like as we go in and repair areas of it. And there again, you can see the split in the piping. This is actually laying on a cart, so we replaced all of this with new PVC piping. This here is in the electrical room in this building, and you can see the salt debris on the ceiling here, and that's going to lead into my next slide, where the printing floor, which is where the old sheriff's garage used to be back when the building was occupied by the sheriff's department, and the salts just deteriorated the flooring system. This is a photo of that floor slab looking at it from below. This is actually supposed to be rebar in this flooring system. The bottom part of the floor actually gave way and came down onto the ceiling. And this rebar is what holds that floor in place. So what the county did about 3 or 4 years ago is we went in and did a temporary fix just to hold the ceiling up to make it safe. And we put in all of these wooden columns in there. And there must be 100 of them in there with plywood on the ceiling just to hold that in place. Right now there's no one occupying the above space or this basement space. So that's another hurdle we have to overcome sooner rather than later. And then the next slides, I'm going to call on Rick Stickler from Midwest Environmental to talk about the asbestos in the building. Rick has done work for the county for probably close to 20 years, very familiar with this building. So I'll let him describe what these are and some of the challenges.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. Okay, this is the laser.
No, bottom trigger right here.
That's the laser.
That's the
advance.
And that's the laser.
Oh, got it. Okay. All right. Hello, everybody. Wanted to make you familiar with some of the building materials to understand this building and how the asbestos-containing materials are and where they're in the building. Takes a little bit of knowing how the building's constructed and where you see. Typically, like this shot here, you're going to find a lot of the asbestos materials are used on the superstructure of the building. And so you're going to have a series of, you know, steel I-beams and metal decking. You know, it's being held up by Sheffield tile. You'll see, you know, this is like clay tile that's on the side. And as you go above these ceiling tiles, you know, you're going to end up with the superstructure of this building. And that's where these types of materials. Oh, sure. And so what we're looking at on this particular photo is you've got metal decking, and there's a spray-down surfacing material on this. Now, a lot of people have notions of what asbestos is and what the hazards of it are. And really, when it comes down to it, the hazards with asbestos is the dust. So the key to dealing with it is trying to keep the material in a dust-free state or something that binds up the dust. And that's some of the tough parts of dealing with an older building that's constructed in the 60s that's got some of these materials in it. Is that, you know, you don't see this, but there's other people that deal with a space like this all the time. You may have maintenance people that'll come in here. You'll notice that we have wiring that's being run in through here. So as you do capital improvements to a building like this over time, you'll find that you have to deal with this type of space, and then the employees or the subs that'll come in and work in these spaces are needing to deal with the asbestos. When Jim was showing you some of the slides of the garage area and how the concrete was giving way, one of the first steps to doing that process was actually the bottom side of that garage roof had this same type of spray on asbestos. And so the first step of dealing with that project was to actually bring in abatement contractors and remove the asbestos. You can safely deal and remove the asbestos, but it gets to be part of every project. And so there you can start to see how costs come in to a building that has the material. You know, every time you do a project, every time you do a room, you're adding a little bit more money in on the project for dealing with the asbestos abatement on the front end of it before you actually start the repairs or start to replace the materials. And so that's really a consideration when you're looking at the long-term uses of the building. You know, how long is the service life of it? Is it going to get to the point where you have diminishing returns, or, you know, do you want to continue to add to the cost of the building repair or maintenance or renovation with the capital improvements that you do? Which one? Oh, the trigger. That's right. Okay, here's a typical deck space. This could be anywhere in the building. This particular photo was taken on the second floor, and if you were above the ceiling where you get off of the elevator, that'd be that large open room right off of the elevator. And what we're looking at here is we're looking at a steel I-beam and the metal decking once again, and that's all a sprayed-on type of acoustical surface material that contains asbestos. And you can see over time how they're adding utilities, running computer cable, telephone wire, and things like that. And so people do get up in these spaces, and then you need to deal with that when you're doing the project. This particular photo, as you go through the hallways, a lot of your utilities that you can get at this point in time when you try to run new cable and things like this go down the center of the hallways. And you'll see we'll have plastic tiles here. And as you pull off these plastic tiles, then you can pretty much see that superstructure that we've seen on the last two photos. Outside and above where we're standing right now is a metal pan type of ceiling tile, and this is the back side of one. And what you're looking at here is some paper over some fiberglass that insulates the top of these tiles. And what you're seeing is various debris that's on top of the tiles. That's the fallout from this material as you get vibration, people working on the building over time, and you can see how you have something start to accumulate there. Okay, I'm taking the one section so you can relate with this. This is actually across from Jim's office. But what we're going to do here is, you know, here's the finished portion of the building, and then we're going to venture above, and we're going to take out one of those ceiling tiles to see how close you are to the actual superstructure of the building. So what we're getting there, it's getting a little hard to see, is we're starting to see where all of our HVAC, our ductwork, our pipe insulation that feeds the domestic water systems and things like this, where they are. Here's a little bit closer shot, and so you can see where you're having the I-beams and the Sheffield tile, and you can see where you'll have the various materials here. And so over time, this material starts to fall down. You get trades working in here all the time doing the, you know, there's a leaking pipe or something like that. They're going to be up here working in above the hallway. As you get into the offices, it's a little bit more difficult to get above this material, and then if you need to do repairs, then you need to probably have an organized project to actually do asbestos abatement to get above a ceiling like this. What we're looking at is some pipe insulation. What you're going to see in the building here is that the white material that's on all the fittings and elbows, that's the asbestos-containing material. In a 60s construction like this, the straight runs are fiberglass. Fiberglass isn't necessarily the hazard that asbestos is, but that's, you know, you got old plumbing. And so there's something that's a concern. When you're going to do a plumbing repair project, you're going to add to the cost of the project to do asbestos abatement in front of it. And then you can see how the different ductwork will feed over from the hallway and go into each of the different offices. The offices in these locations, actually with the HVAC systems, will return air to these hall plenums. And then those hall plenums will return air to the air handling units and fans that are in various locations in the building. And then you have a certain amount of outside air comes in here. You have a certain amount of this air that's recirculated. Here's a little bit better shot. A lot of the utilities that are hanging there are basically put into the ceilings or hanging from usually some type of steel or metal cabling. And so, you know, this stuff gets disturbed over time as you're running new computers, putting in new plumbing runs and things like that. You'll see where a new cable tray that's been put in along the main body of the hallway. And is this material friable? Yes. And if you touch it or put your hands on it, you know, you can get it to crumble down over time. And that's been occurring over time. What we have here is the typical air handling unit in the building. I believe this is over in the B wing. And it's kind of over by the jail. And these are the pipe insulation fittings that feed the coil and the heat exchangers for this. And so you'll find various mechanical spaces in the basement and various places and chases that are around the building. That's the last one. So does anybody have any questions about these types of materials and where they are?
All hands shoot up in the room. Supervisor Doyle.
To give us some perspective in terms of abatement, if we decided to take care of the asbestos above the ceiling in this room, about how much would that cost us?
In this room, if we were to, first thing you'd probably have to do this room is you'd probably have to remove all the casework and the furnishings. And then the next thing that you'd be doing is you would put everything in here in plastic. And so the contractors would come in and they would demolish the ceiling. They'd have air units that they'd bring in. And everything is, you know, in respirators and under negative air filtration. And so for a room like this size, I would say this is about the same size as the garage area, right? And that was roughly about what, about 18,000? And I think the consulting cost and air testing, you know, supervising the work was probably about another couple thousand. So let's give a ballpark price tag about 20,000. Yeah.
Can I just add to that?
Sure.
That's to remove what's there, then put everything back. New ceiling, new lights, and then the casework back in. So.
Supervisor Karen Johnson.
This is close to that question, but you do small maintenance and repairs around the building. You talked about sometimes when that happens, you have to do the asbestos abatement as well. About how much of the small maintenance and repair budget goes to asbestos abatement then?
That's a good question. Jim will know that.
If we get into pipe repairs that has asbestos on it, we deal with it with that. Not too often. Usually it's in the straight runs where we can cut the fiberglass out and then replace it with fiberglass. It's on a case-by-case basis. If we get into to one pipe fitting, then we can call an abatement contractor in and do what's called a bag glove operation where they don't have to get carried away with a room like this. But the smaller ones, it's easy, but when you get into a mass remodel, then it gets more costly.
Other questions? Supervisor Doyle.
One more question. If we were to demolish this building, do you have to do anything with the asbestos first, or do you just demolish it?
Sure. Yes, you will. The state code is basically before you renovate, or before you have a demolition project, you need to identify all the material, and then you need to remove all the material before you do your project. So there's costs with it. If you are not going to renovate, I think your costs will be slightly lower. I've given Jim ideas of cost for going both routes. And if you're not going to reoccupy the building, there'll be a little bit less air testing costs. You have to be, obviously a lot more careful when people are going to come back in and occupy the building. Also, the material disposal costs. We ran into this over in Park Plaza when we were demolishing the old Holiday Inn, is when, you have a certain amount of materials, terrazzos and floor tiles, and so a lot of times they'll be on masonry materials, and so you really need to factor that into the cost when you're disposing of heavy items like that. And in most cases, if you want to recycle your concrete, you need to probably remove the asbestos floor tiles and mastics before, and then you'll get decent prices for the recycling, so it factors into the cost.
Other questions? Supervisor Pedretti.
It seems very depressing to look at.
Yeah, sorry about
that. I've been on the board now 4 years, and I know we've been talking about it since I've been on the board. How dire is it that we do something here? Can you give...
You've been dealing with a building that has asbestos in it for a number of, many years, 20, 30 years since I've, worked on the building. Before that, it's been built in the 60s or late 50s. There's other buildings in this town that are built, the same construction materials of the same type, and the people that manage those buildings have been dealing with those as well. The secret of the material is to continue to maintain it in place while you're, in the life of the building. You're looking at a lot of things, and costs of running a building, it factors into it. They're always trying to keep things safe and work on projects here, but when they do a project, then they have to go ahead and the first step is usually the asbestos abatement on the front end of things, take that out, and then they can do the regular tear out and then, remodel a section and then rebuild it. And you can go through that, and there's a certain amount of cost in doing it that way.
Okay, so the answer to the question is?
The answer to the question is it's a function of the dust, okay? If you can keep it intact and undisturbed. I think maybe the best word to use here is disturb. You try
right.
not to disturb the material and keep it intact, and that's what you've been doing here for many years. And you continue to monitor and make sure there's not something getting loose, and then have some vigilance when you're planning projects and doing capital improvements.
Okay. I guess that leads me into maybe a question for the chair is there some discussion of starting some kind of a committee to discuss this. I'm sure you're not looking for any, I mean, we don't have any answers tonight, and it's going to take some major work, or Mr. O'Malley has a, you know, what are we going to do? I mean, it sounds like something needs to happen at some point here. I'm still not hearing a timetable what that means.
And that's probably the best place to leave it is we don't have a recommendation or a timeline at this point. We recognize that as part of your capital budget, we're going to have to make some recommendations. There are so many conflicting demands on your limited amount of dollars. You're going to hear later on about the demands for highway dollars. You're going to hear about the demands for Lakeview dollars. You're going to hear about the demands for this building. And in each one of those cases, there are various things that are involved. But let me just concentrate on this building. As you can see, there are a lot of challenges, whether you build new, whether you remodel, everything from that there are certain efficiencies that can be gained by remodeling or building new because departments can be restructured to share receptionists, to utilize square footages better. But once you make the commitment to this building, if that's chooses to be your policy choice, we've got to actually figure out the phased means of actually making that transition. If you've been around this building, there isn't a lot of excess space. So if you do one floor at a time, you have to figure out how to stage that kind of change that would happen, as well as what the long-term design would be. Whether or not we're able to make much progress in 2013's budget, I think is questionable because of Lakeview, because of the highway department. But we have to keep this on the forefront and figure out if and when we're able to afford to do something, what is the choice of the county board? Is it to build new or to replace and remodel? And what would be that staging so we can start to actually address this? If you look at your capital improvement budget, guess how much we have of major capital improvement projected for the next 5 years in this particular building? Goose egg. Because we've kicked this down the road for that long, and frankly, Jim and I have talked about this, we don't have a recommendation for you. And at the same time, part of our recommendation needs to be a set of choices that you're going to have to guide. And yes, it will come back to some hardcore committee work. But frankly, I think Lakeview is going to be an earlier decision because we have to decide what level of business we're in, what level of remodeling or replacement or building new can happen at Lakeview before we're even going to get to this building. But these kinds of issues just aren't going to go away, and Jim's staff continues to struggle with how many Band-Aids and how much duct tape do you do to just keep getting... But duct tape's good, though. Yep.
So, I would add to that, I think, very good answer, that I think what we have come to expect as a county board is that we are informed, and seeing pictures is... in a situation like this, an especially helpful way to become informed and educated about it. And just as a side note, that's part of why we are trying to do these planning meetings in the way that we are over these several months, is when we go to Lakeview, we will see Lakeview. When we go out to the highway shop, we will, you know, it will be helpful, I think, to understand and become informed about the highway situation. So it is intentional that we are having these meetings and that these topics are being cycled through. That's one. I think the second thing is that we have come to expect of the staff that we will continue to be offered choices. I mean, that we are going to have to go through a series of decisions, and what we will expect from staff is to have as much information, pro and con, about all of, you know, an array of choices before us that will include timing and will address the issue of, you know, how dire is this. So I think that that's what Steve is saying, is that that's what they are expecting us to ask of them, especially as we move into the annual budget process and then long-term planning that we need to do as well. Supervisor, was that it for you, Supervisor Pedretti? Supervisor Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just out of curiosity, if we were to remodel, is there a cost-efficient way of containing asbestos without having to actually take it out? I mean, you're talking about abatement. I'm assuming that means you have Correct. To remove it. Is there some way to just contain it? You know,
yeah, in the past, they've talked about the three ways of dealing with asbestos is encapsulation, enclosure, and then abatement. And the difficulties, and it depends on what type of material you have. If all you had here was pipe insulation, then you'd have a lot more options and probably a whole lot less cost. Fluorine, you know, that the fluorine's an issue that can be dealt with, and it can be dealt with in place. The tough one you have is the surfacing material, because it's so innate in the building. You know, it's on the structural members, it's on the decking, it's fallen over, you know, a lot of different types of things. So that really takes a lot of the encapsulation potential out of it. When you look at the cost, you know, ultimately the highest cost is abatement, but it's also the best solution because the material's gone when you're done. And so the next thing you're looking at is encapsulating it or covering the material or binding it in a matrix. And typically, by the time you're done, to do that, you have to disturb it. And once you disturb it, you have to do a lot of the same things that you do when you're doing the abatement. And so typically, the figure that's usually used is about 80% of the cost of the abatement. The problem is you still have the material there, and eventually you're going to increase the cost because you're going to make that material very hard and bound up, hard to take out. The last is enclosure, and that is something where you could permanently seal things. Those tend to be good short fixes in small localized areas. You know, if you had pipes going through this room and you wanted to enclose them in a chase, made out of drywall, that would be an example of enclosure. And so that would be something that could be done. But the problem that you have in a building like this is you need to be able to get access to some of these places, and so you need to get above the ceilings. And it's a good thing to have suspended ceilings. You find a lot of places when they remodel, they like to put in suspended ceilings so you can get at it. Where on a ceiling like this, it's been here since the day it was put together. It's tongue and groove, and you can't get up here without actually demolishing it. Does that answer your question? Okay.
Any other questions? I know we ended on this building, but also any questions of Jim on the earlier portion of his presentation on facilities department, which I thought was also very helpful. Thank you. Any other questions? If not, thank you very much, Jim. Thank you, Rick, for coming in to help out. That leads us to suggestions for future agenda items. Supervisor Geary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a clarification. I seen next month our planning meetings at the highway shop.
Let me interject. In talking with the chair, we're making a change on that. I would ask that the meeting be here, and then we actually focus on the Lakeview building issues. The work group that's been working on this that you may have been reading about in the monthly reports is prepared to bring you a range of three choices just on the building. Don't have all the answers on how to pay for it and those kinds of things, but to compare the choice of remodeling versus building new versus building a series of smaller facilities. We'll present that information to you not for a decision, but to answer your questions and at least show you that we believe we're in a fork on the road right now regarding a Lakeview and can at least over this period of time make some decisions. So I'm asking that meeting actually happen here instead of at Highway and move Highway discussion to August. It's also giving me more time with Ron on how to describe the Highway challenges.
Okay, that's a long answer to a short question.
Yep. I was going to have to bring
at the August
anyway.
Meeting, yep. When you meet at Highway, the Public Works was listed as meeting down here. Should they be meeting out there also?
That would be appropriate, right. Okay. But I needed to tell you that change of strategy.
Any other suggestions for future agenda items? Supervisor Richmond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like an update on the Skipper Liner update, if they're making payments. I noticed that was on the agenda for economic development. Park Plaza, I would like an update. Where are we with marketing on that? I haven't seen anything. I don't even see a sign on the property that it is for sale. And then also, read a little bit about the La Crosse Promise. Are any tax dollars used or employees for this lacrossepromise.org? So
are you wanting those as specific agenda items for the full county board?
I would like just that on planning, if okay. Somebody could great. Give me an update on that.
So there, and just so you know, they're in the minutes of Economic Development Fund, for example, will be in this month's packet, will be information on Skipper Liner, but we can certainly add them to planning agendas in addition.
Well, I looked for the minutes, and they are not on the website yet.
Right.
Yeah, it was just this last Thursday. We've got a vacancy that we're spreading out who's doing the minutes because
so they'll be in the they'll be online and in the packet in the June cycle. But we can certainly do both or all three La Crosse Promise Park Plaza and Skipper Liner as agenda items to the full board at a planning meeting in the next month or so, depending on how long those other major topics
I'm
are.
I'm sure we can include each of these, and I can also share with you La Crosse Promise doesn't have any tax dollars in it. Skipper Liner will be making payments, and we'll give you a more detailed report at the policy planning.
Well, there are suggestions for future agenda items.
I'd like to just ask a question on La Crosse Promise. Are there any employees working on this La Crosse Promise?
Yep.
And how
many
we'll
give
hours?
You a full comprehensive report on it.
Yep. Okay, thank you.
Other suggestions for future agenda items? If not, I apologize that we don't have an update on the picnic, because I know you're all hanging on that, but we will carry that over to the full board meeting next week. And with that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn by Supervisor Brockmiller, seconded by Supervisor Cruz. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? No. We are adjourned.